All right, everybody, let's begin. Very exciting. It was 6:13, now it's 6:15, but still we'll go with 6:13 as the time to start. Bruchim Habaim, welcome everybody to a new topic in our Limud Gemara, in our study. This one will actually be Gemara. We are going to be studying the sugya, the halachic Talmudic topic of Kibud Avaim, honoring one's mother and one's father, which runs for about five pages towards the end of the first chapter of Masechet Kiddushin. Last semester we studied Avelut. Next morning in bereavement. Next semester I hope to study Geirut, the topic of conversion. What is it that Avelut and Geirut and Kibud Av V'em all have in common with one another? This isn't anything particularly deep, but just to sort of share with you my thinking for the sort of stuff that I enjoy learning and that I hope is also interesting in a university setting. I like to try and pick topics where they are well known but completely unknown, if you know what I mean. Meaning everybody is going to interact at one point in their lives with Avelut. You are likely going to meet converts. It's certainly not an unknown area. Kibud Av V'em, as we will go on to say, is one of the most sort of like total of all mitzvot. And yet these are areas and which I think each one of them will give you an insight into some of the real fundamentals and mechanics of Torah, of Judaism. And yet are frequently understudied for different reasons. Geirut doesn't fit into a particular Masechet, Avelut, there's this funny superstition about not learning it. Kibud Av V'em, I think it's sort of like just assumed, oh, you know it, or you just grow up with it, and you treat your parents nicely, and that's all there is to it. As we're going to go on to hopefully discover, Kibud Av V'em is one of possibly, arguably, the most difficult of all mitzvot to actually do. It's impossible to actually fulfill. And study of it, certainly when one goes back to the original Gemara, you will see how Chazal are completely aware of the great nuances and complexities and difficulties involved in the mitzvah of honoring one's parents. And so that's what these three topics have in common. I really feel I could spend all evening giving just an introduction to the topic and various thoughts about it. I'm just try and share a few brief thoughts before we really dive into the topic. Here is the first one. My teacher of Yehuda Brandis, when he starts his chapter on a long chapter in one of his books on Kibud Av V'em, 80 pages or so, begins with a piece from Rav Kook, in which Rav Kook speaks about how every single member of Am Yisrael needs to have the confidence and belief in themselves that they are created Tzelem Elokim in God's image, that they are barhachi, they are able to be individuals standing strong by themselves, that who are able to make decisions. Why does Rav Brandis introduce this at this moment? Because unlike any other area of halacha, certainly classic areas of halacha, Shabbat, Kashrut, etc., Kibud Av V'em is the area where each one of us as an individual is the posek. We are the halachic decisor. When it comes to Shabbat Kashrut, you can consult a book, you can ask a rabbi, you can often lahachmir, you can be safek lahachmir, you can be stringent just in case. When it comes to the topics of Kibud Av V'em, each individual case is so personal. The questions, it doesn't fit into a simple, can you be machmir, can you be mekel, are you strict, are you lenient? Frequently the decisions are made in absolute real time, etc. It's not a topic which fits into the sort of question and answer shaylot, the tshuvot method that we have with other areas of halacha. For that reason, as we're going to go to see on in the study, you cannot solely study the halacha. The halacha, meaning the legal aspects of it, have to be combined with the agadata, with the stories and the examples, which really bring out lots of the lots of the complexities. Maybe let's get out the source sheet at this stage, if you want to take one and pass on. A few more thoughts before we really get into the depths of Kibud Av Ve'em. Source number three, it's a five-word halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Resh Mem, which is the major source of the major siman, the major chapter in the Shulchan Aruch on Kibud Av Ve'em. It reads as follows, these five words, Talmud Torah gadol mikibud av ve'em. Talmud Torah is greater than or more important than honoring one's parents. Can somebody just give a thought as to why that is such a weird halacha?
It's kind of like taking away from Kibud Av
Ve'em. So that's one's first instinct when reading it. So here's something that's more important than Kibud Av Ve'em. Okay, Malka?
Also, don't you always say that there are parents kind of like, wouldn't you categorize being kind to your parents or respectful of your parents as something?
Okay, so that's questioning the halacha itself, Naomi?
Because there are other, like, I don't know exactly what sources they are, but, like, Talmud Torah kind of, like, is, like, equal to, like, everything. So why does it specifically need to point out, like, Kibud Av Ve'em? Like, what's so special about Kibud Av Ve'em that it needs to point out that?
Very, very, that's exactly what I want to go down very quickly, Toby, Dorit, Pinchas, if you had other things to add.
It's
going to
be successful.
You don't normally open up Shulchan Aruch to a specific halachic area and find this mitzvah is greater than that mitzvah. Right, that's not the way in which halacha works. Sometimes you have, you know, two mitzvot conflict with each other, you'll have a specific scenario. But it's one-off sefer, one-off comment, you know, not in relation to anything, saying Talmud Torah is greater. I think that what's learned from this is that Talmud Torah on the one hand and Kibud Av Ve'em on the other are two of the very few mitzvot which accompany a person from the moment that they are able to actually be an independent individual from whatever age that is, throughout their whole life to the very end of their life, unless you think that Kibud Av Ve'em doesn't accompany one to the end of one's life. The Gemara is very clear that Kibud Av Ve'em exists beyond the grave as well, and that once one has lost one's parents, there is still an obligation to honor them. They are, as it were, total mitzvot. And so they in a sense are almost unique mitzvot in that they can't be consigned to one day of the week or an occasional moment in one's life. They are mitzvot which accompany one at every single moment. Let's play out that idea. Not only do they accompany one at every single moment, but they change drastically, or that's specifically Kibud Av Ve'em changes drastically from one stage of a person's life to another. You cannot compare the way in which a 10-year-old relates to their parents from the way in which people your age relate to your parents. The difference between you and me in terms of age is not that great, but being married and having children massively impacts one's relationship with one's parents, certainly in terms of introducing new and additional obligations and difficult directions which might make it more difficult to give one's fulfill one's responsibilities to one's parents in the way in which one used to. And this is something that I guess I never really thought about until I started studying this. But people who are your parents, if their parents are still alive, Kibud Av Ve'em works for them as well and is significant for them as well. And certainly once one's parents get to very old age, then the difficulties or the nuances or just the nature of Kibud Av Ve'em changes dramatically. So that's one point, and connected to that is that Kibud Av Ve'em changes from one generation to another. That each generation, without getting into how each individual scenario is completely different, but each generation the circumstances change. So just to throw out a couple of things which I think are particular to our generation, financial independence comes to much later age today, certainly in the West, than it has come at previous points, right? You know, by the time you were probably 15, 100, 200 years ago, certainly by the time you were 18, you were likely able to stand for yourself, whereas people well into their 20s are often reliant on their parents for financial support and the way in which that impacts Kibud Av Ve'em. At the other end of the spectrum, longevity. People are living for far longer, meaning that people will have their parents alive for far longer. But whereas length of life has been increased, that doesn't necessarily mean that people in their 80s and 90s are in full control of their mental and physical capacities. And so caring for parents who may well be physically or mentally impaired into very old age is something which is very commonplace today, which was far rarer in the past. So 200 years ago, you were probably financially independent by the time you were 18, and you were probably dead by the time you were 60. For us, you are frequently not financially independent until your late 20s, and you may well still be a child of parents who are alive when you're well into your 60s or 70s. And so Kibbutz Av Ve'Em is going to change dramatically from one to the other. Ad kan, general introduction. We could carry on for a long time, but it would be nice to also jump into a sugya, although maybe let's start with something of a half introduction. I'll ask what is sort of a silly question, but the Aruch HaShulchan asks it, so we'll say it's an important question. Why is there no bracha over Kibbutz Av Ve'Em?
Constant, there's no like instance of it which you can make a bracha over.
Very good. So you could say that to the nature of mitzvot, which is sort of like constant, there is never a bracha over. Whilst I definitely sort of implicitly hear that, what we'll actually discover when we learn the sugyot is that the halacha does see specific actions as fulfilling the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av Ve'Em. To give a sort of simple example, your parent says, please bring me something to drink, you bring them something to drink. That is a formal fulfillment of what the halacha says is Kibbutz Av Ve'Em. Elisa?
You also don't say mitzvah on anything that's reliant on someone else. So like, let's say for Bikur Cholim are giving tzedakah, you don't say a mitzvah before it because they might reject your tzedakah or they might not want to see you, so it's like you don't know.
Yafeh me'od. Elisa is giving the answer that the Rashba gave to his own question. Shulta Rashba, Chelek Aleph Siman Yud Chet. The Rashba asks, what distinguishes mitzvot, which we make brachot over, from mitzvot, which we don't? I think then again, however, I could push back in that the mitzvah of tzedakah is indeed not fulfilled unless the person who is receiving the tzedakah accepts it. Kibbutz Av Ve'Em is not dependent upon whether or not your parents are pleased with you or not, right? The obligation holds regardless. Any other suggestions? Half a hand, Ben? So I want to share with you the Aruch HaShulchan's answer, not because it's necessarily the obviously correct answer to the specific question, but because it's a very big insight. What is Nusach HaBrachot? Right? How are Brachot formulated? Asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. God who has sanctified us, Am Yisrael, with his commandments and commanded us, Am Yisrael. In other words, Am Yisrael and not the rest of the world. However, look at the Aruch HaShulchan here, source number 5. V'yesh sha'alu, and there are those who have asked, Lama ein mavarachin al mitzvah zu, why do we not make a blessing over this? And so too they've asked over the various other mitzvot, Gemara Chasidim, etc., etc. End of the first line. V'la'aniot dati, and in my humble opinion, nireh, it seems to me, dekevan dechol om v'lashon, since every nation, every people, osim otam, honor their parents, perform this mitzvah. Nehisha, therefore, it does not, we'll carry on reading it in a second, therefore it is something which is global. It is something which is universal. Every nation, every culture, has an idea of honoring their parents, of treating their parents well. And so, says the Aruch HaShulchan, the language of God who has sanctified us, God who has commanded us, would be imprecise in that it relates, it's a universal mitzvah, it relates to all of mankind. Now, I wouldn't be bringing this seemingly random halacha right at the outset if I didn't actually think this captures something very interesting. See if people get it as we go along. It's not, I'm going to start a sentence and see if you guys can finish it. It's not just that Kibbutz Av Ve'Em is something that the whole world does, or the whole world should do. Even more than that, .. Can anybody finish the sentence?
The whole world is commanded to do?
No, push it even further.
No, I think it's something that the whole world isn't commanded to do, because it's not like one of like the shadow that's opening up, but it's something that's so intuitive.
Something, so the Aruch HaShulchan goes on to say that indeed, you know, they do it because of what's called Heskel, which is basically intuitive, whereas we do it because we are commanded, and he notes that difference and says it's a very important difference, but nevertheless, for the purposes of bracha. Not only does the whole world do Kibbutz Av Ve'Em, but in the eyes of the Torah, And in the eyes of Chazal, Giborei Kibud Av Ve'em, the great heroes of honoring their parents, almost always not Jewish. Anybody ever thought of that before? Of course, this isn't, doesn't quite make sense, but you know what I mean if I say Esav is not Jewish, right? Esav is not one of the Avot, of course, Yitzhak's son, but particularly Esav, who, you know, possibly more than any other character is vilified in so many ways. You'll all be familiar with the Midrashim that his ultimate redeeming factor was that he honored his father Yitzhak, he brought him the food that he loved, he cared for him when Yaakov ran away and was, spent years and years abroad. Esav stayed home. Esav becomes, in Chazal's eyes, and I think you can also see it in the text, the model of Kibud Av Ve'em. A few dapim in, where we'll get to the story of Dama ben Natina. Anybody remember Dama ben Natina from learning about him as youngsters? I remember that was one of the few Talmudic stories I remember from high school.
Wait, which?
Dama ben Natina.
Yeah, the one in Kiddushin. First there was the
Paraduma. That's right. Dama ben Natina, the non-Jew of Ashkelon.
Yeah.
Right, everyone gets it? Everyone remembers this? Yeah, oh, everyone remembers their 11-year-old Talmud class. Dama ben Natina, the non-Jew of Ashkelon, who happens to have a Paraduma, a red heifer, in his herd, and the sages come to him and say, we will pay so much for this, right? The purity of all of Am Yisrael depends upon this. And Dama ben Natina says, yes, of course, I'd be delighted to help you out with this. And he goes to get the key to unlock the cow shed. But guess what? The key is under his father's pillow, and his father's asleep. And he returns to the sages, and he says, I'm afraid I can't wake him up. And they say, look, we will, we'll double it. We'll make it 3 million shekels. He says, I just can't. They say, we'll make it 10. They think he's in it trying to extort. And he says, I just can't wake him up. They end up offering a far, far higher sum than they'd originally intended. Then his father has woken up. He gets the key. He returns to them. He says, I'll only take the first thing you offered. That's what I was taking. And this, then there's another story in Sanhedrin with a Persian king as well, who's seen as sort of like this astonishing exemplar of honoring one's parents. And it seems to me that the idea is that this universal aspect, that they are frequently seen as the heroes of Kibud Av Ve'em, teaches something about the nature of the mitzvah. It's not something which is particular to Am Yisrael. Rather, it stems from, as Toby said, our intuitive humanity, that Kibud Av Ve'em should be one of the core things that we do. Okay, ad kan, a few very interesting points with which to get going. Let's begin the sugya, and as I said, what we're going to do is we're going to really try and combine both the agadata and the halacha. Let's see how we do. The Mishnah in Kiddushin speaks about the mitzvot which children are obligated to do for their parents and the mitzvot which parents are obligated to do for their children. Source number 6. Kol mitzvot ha'av al haben. All of the mitzvot relating between a father and a child, which Rabbi Yehuda explains, Hachi ka'amar, this is what it means. Kol mitzvot ha'av hamutelet al haben la'asot la'aviv. All of the mitzvot which relate to a parent, which a child, literally a son, is commanded to do for their father. Echad anashim ve'echad nashim chayavim. Men and women are equal in this endeavor, both male and female, sons and daughters, have an equal responsibility to their parents, one from the other. Right? This is really the sugya of both the similar and the different obligations of men and women. This is a category of mitzvot where men and women are equal one to the other. However, it's not going to be quite as complicated as that. I'm going to project a little bit what's going to happen. We're going to read a Gemara, next few lines, which I think would probably be one which people will look at and will say, outdated, that is super conservative, that is, you know, gender roles, you know, of a bygone era which don't reflect where we're at today. I'm going to make the argument that actually there is something much more nuanced and relevant going on, and we dismiss it at our peril. But let's do this together. What we're going to try and do now is try and unpack one of the important verses about Kibud Av Ve'em to see Relative differences between men and women. Tanina, it was taught, Lahadatanu Rabbanan, what our rabbis taught, Ish, a man. What's that referring to? That is referring to source number two. Somebody want to read source number two? Pasuk in Vayikra. Gabe? Translate.
A man and a person, his mother and his father, yes, a deer and...
Well, you translated it as a man and then you switched it to person. Okay, yeah. Nuance noted.
And his mother and his father, yes, a deer and my Shabbos is Yathakif. I am Hashem and God.
Okay, so in future weeks we'll talk about the significance of the end of that pasuk, which brings into play the tension between honoring your parents and honoring God. But the first half of the pasuk, right, and Gabe made it very clear in giving two translations. What seems to be the nuance that would get into the different roles between men and women in honoring their parents? Obviously,
just says men.
Ish, says the Gemara, back now in source number six. Ainli ela ish, all I know from that verse is that men are obligated to honor their parents. Isha minayin. How do I know that a woman is obligated to honor their parents? Kashahu omer, when the pasuk then continues, tira'u, you shall fear. What is that? Plural. Harei kanshnayim, I've therefore got two people. Right, so it's a plural, i.e. men and women. All right, but what's the response to that? Imken, very good. Ma talmud lama ish. Why pick the very particular language of ish? Answer. Ish, a man, sipek biyado la'asot, is going to... No, that doesn't mean suffix.
Usually that
would be an interesting reading. No, thank you, that's a very good translation. The wherewithal has the capability, it's within his abilities, la'asot, to honour his parents, to do what is incumbent upon him. Isha, a woman, en sipek biyado la'asot, may well not be able to fulfill her parents' requests. Why? Mipnei shirushut acherim aleha. Since there are the responsibilities, or the, to give an outdated translation, which I don't want to use, but just it's there, the dominion of others is upon her. In other words, her family. Right? So let's just let's try to unpack this together, right? You can, yeah, Malka.
Not that difficult to unpack. I mean,
yeah, go on.
When is it being written?
No, I'm saying like.
Well, that's exactly what I'm gonna.
A lot of times we interpret, especially like, only social whatever classes, all the teachers are call everything misogynistic because they're looking at it from a view of this time. But back in the day, I mean, a woman was obligated to whoever her family was, mm-hmm. whoever she married. Mm-hmm. So she would have obligation to, I guess, like, her family, the family that she married into, and then her children and her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, her husband was, you know, again, like, he's in charge of...
So I'm going to completely agree with you that that's the obvious first response to any of these sorts of questions. For those of you who spend time on God Save Us From Your Opinion, the thread which had 170 comments when I checked yesterday was whether or not, based on last week's parasha, Rashi is racist, because why does Avram hide Sarai in the box? Because all of the shchorim in Egypt have never seen a beautiful woman before, so they'll all be driven mad, etc. And was Rashi racist? Which is a ridiculous question.
Race wasn't a construct. Was alive.
I mean, what is the likelihood that Rashi had ever seen a black person living in 12th century France? And in any case, there's a stirrer, because when Moshe and Aaron are when Miriam and Aaron are speaking about Ha'isha HaKushit Asher Lakach Moshe, Rashi says because Isha HaKushit is the most beautiful of all women. So whatever.
That's not exactly what
he
says.
but whatever. Malka is you and I frequently disagree about Rashi. But I don't mean to go down this path really. What I mean to point out is that Malka is completely response to say contested. But I'm going to push it further than this, Mark. No, I'm going to push it further than this, and I'm going to say that actually we do ourselves and the Gemara a disservice, even if we just say it's speaking in its time. And actually, I want to try and give it a very sympathetic reading for today. Let's just speak it out before we put any sort of readings on it. What is being said? Why? Maybe let's just finish the Gemara. Amar Rav Idi Bar Avin, Amar Rav, Nitgarsha, if a couple split up, Shnehem Shavim, right? No difference whatsoever between a man and a woman. Now, single again, and obviously not just Nitgarsha, but even obviously also unmarried. There is no difference between male and female obligation to their parents. So let's just rebuild, and it's an amazing reading of the verse, right? Ish et ish imo va'aviv tira'u. Tira'u hare kan shnaim. It's in the plural. Men and women are obligated equally in responsibilities towards their parents. However, the language of ish is in order to distinguish between the respective responsibilities that men and women may well have in their families, that a man is able to fulfill his parents' requirements, a woman taken up with other responsibilities is going to be unable to. So let me try and make an argument for how this isn't only correct in its time, but even is actually has a lot of wisdom today. Firstly, obviously, not necessarily obviously, but firstly, you don't have to look very far in the halakha in order to see that the categories and the roles assigned to man and woman here do not have to be assigned to man and woman specifically, but rather to one half of the couple. The Shulchan Aruch, source number 7, essentially just quotes the Gemara, Echad ha'isha, echad ha'isha, shavin bekibud uvmora shel av ve'em, ela shahe isha em biyad la'asod, etc. Says the Shach, source number 8, lefikach hiptura, therefore she is exempt, quoting the Shulchan Aruch, from av'em ba'odin resua, while she is married to her husband. V'nireh, and it seems to me, dim ein ba'la makpid, chayevet b'chol davar she'efshar k'mo ha'ish. Right, if the couple are in agreement with one another about their way in which they're going to split up their domestic obligations in the house, to the kids, to their professional lives, etc., then obviously her obligations to her parents are just as much as his obligations to his parents, or possibly the other way around. You know, the woman has the husband who, I don't know, is the stay-at-home husband or is the one who's always out at work, and it's the woman who's got a much easier time fulfilling, more spare time, if you like, to relate to her parents. So what does the Shach say? Ish and Isha here are not hard set categories. Like Malka said, it probably reflected the specific reality of 1800 years ago, but the halakha does not mean that the man should honor his parents, whereas the woman should stay at home. They can go from one to the other. That's a very important thing to note. But what I think is important to capture here is that what this Gemara, or what this specific halakha recognizes, and let's try to get out of our heads the gender topics of today, is that we can't, not men, not women, cannot fulfill all of the responsibilities and the obligations we have to all the people around us, right? Trust me, I understand this from my last 4 years of marriage, and you all will in due course. Your obligations to your partner are 100%, and your obligations to your parents are 100%. And you simply cannot do everything you would like to do for both of them. Being single is much easier. And if I'm to sort of then bring it back to the present day, and maybe get into slightly interesting, controversial territory, but I invite responses. I think that perhaps there's something unhealthy in our society for both men and women when the phrase in Hebrew is kol yachol, when we say that people can do everything, right? A woman or a man can be, really in a top profession, really driving forward, like having a very fulfilling, very demanding work life, and be an outstanding parent to their children, and an outstanding partner to their spouse, and an outstanding child to their parents. I don't believe it. And I think it's an ashlaya. I think it's an illusion, and I think it's a dangerous illusion if we educate in that direction that you can do absolutely everything. Know that what you prioritize is going to have a cost elsewhere. You want to be an outstanding partner, husband, wife, parent to your children? Great. That's going to make it more difficult to be an outstanding child to your parents. You want to have an outstanding career? Great, you really should. Well, hopefully you'll be able to earn enough to have a lovely life at home. But also understand, if in order to be able to do your career, you're going to have a full-time nanny because you're going to be out of the house at 6 a.m. and not back until 11 p.m., well, obviously that's, you're not quite, you're fulfilling via shlichut your obligations to your children, but of course they run into each other. And so I think actually, even though we might read this line as, oh, gender roles, the woman is doing this, etc., etc., I think there's a very important honesty in it, and like the Shach said, it doesn't just mean women particularly, it means men and women, which the halacha is saying, if you've got obligations in one area to your family, you are then patur from kibud av ve'em. And don't feel terrible about it. And don't feel really guilty about it. Because it's all right. The halacha understands you have so many obligations and you can't fulfill all of them. Toby.
Yeah, so just like a question. So then, let's say you're from a family of only women. When the women then get married...
Sorry, what do you mean by only women
sorry,
as sisters?
Like, sorry, mm-hmm. only sisters. Sorry, that's... okay, so like Benot Slavchad before their father died.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Were their husbands then were they commanded to do kibud av ve'em for like Slavchad as it were? Let's say everyone gets married and then no one has the obligation to take care of your parents.
Sorry, I blanked for a second.
Okay.
What's the specific?
I have a family of all girls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they all get married,
mm-hmm.
okay? Then if none of them are obligated to take care of their parents,
right.
mm-hmm. Do their husbands then take on the obligation?
Well, I think that's the moment when it's important to go back to the Shach, right? What the Shach is essentially saying is that each couple decide for themselves mm-hmm. who is going to focus on the home and the kids, who is going to be freed up to consider their parents. And I think the most obvious way of distinguishing between the two is frequently you will have one set of parents who require a huge amount of attention, right? Could be for emotional, physical reasons. And you'll have other parents who are mistadrim, who are fine by themselves. So I think, look, there's a lot of wisdom... wisdom to learn from this. And this is, again, one of the massive nuances. One set of parents, three sets of children, three children, each one of them married. Sometimes there's an equal division between all of the children in terms of how they relate to their parents. Other times, and maybe we can add another thing into what I started with earlier, what are the unique challenges of kibud av ve'em in our generation, is I think today, and obviously I'm an example of this, it's far more frequent to live at a very great distance from your parents than it was in the past, certainly with Aliyah and, having people in America and people in Israel. I was just on the phone to a friend of mine just before this year. She lives in the UK. Her mother lives in the UK. They're British, but her mother's mother lives in Netanya, and she's very unwell, and she's in her 80s, and her mother has got one child in Israel and two children in the UK. So obviously the burden falls very unequally. So I think what you've really got from the Shach here, combine the Shach and the Gemara, is that the Gemara says that you shouldn't feel obligated to be able to do everything because it's not possible. And the Shach says that is something that each couple need to decide for themselves. So I don't think we've got time to do everything. I'd say I'm reading the Shach in a 20th century way, but what does the Shach say? To translate the Shach literally, the Shach says that imein bala makpid, if her husband's okay with it, right, with her not doing as much in the home as perhaps is understood in the language of the Gemara, chayevet, then she is obligated b'kol davar she'efshar, in everything that she can do, k'mo ha'ish, just like her husband. I think I would defend that reading, that what that means is that the couple decide... One for the other.
It's never going to take away from the man's role. So the man always has the obligation. Just whether or not the woman does it too. It doesn't seem like you do it for me.
But I think what it means, Ein Bala Makpid, is that he's happy to take on the responsibility. And then,
it's a nice interpretation. I just feel like it could be stretching a little bit.
Firstly, I can definitely read it into the words, but secondly, I think just misvara, from lived experience, one person's set of parents, really they're in great health, they've got lots of kids around, they've got a great social life. That's, let's say, is the wife's parents, but the husband's parents are unwell, they don't have enough money, who knows what. Then obviously the division between husband and wife will be in that direction. I don't think we've got time to do everything that's left on the score sheet, so we can split half of it for next week, but let's take a quick vote, and I know that asking for a vote is often a bad idea. Do we want Halacha, or do we want Agadita? And the Agadita is always powerful. No, we'll do both, but this week. Hands up for Agadita. Okay. All right. Halacha people promise me you'll come back next week. Okay. Let's go for Agadita. The precise continuation of the previous Gemara. Source number 9. Tanu Rabbanan. Our rabbis taught. Ne'emar. It is said. Kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, honor your father and your mother, which you will likely know comes from the Ten Commandments. Note the Gemara, v'ne'emar, it's also said, kabed et Hashem mehoncha, you should honor God with your hon, with your wealth, with your ability, right? Kavod. Hishva kavod av ve'em, Lichvod hamakom. The honor of one's parents is compared with honoring God. In fact, the Yerushalmi on this, I didn't put the Yerushalmi on the sheet. What's actually the difference between the two verses? The one about honoring your parents, the one about honoring God? Very good, right? Hon. You see that word? Right, says when it comes to honoring Hashem, mihoncha, you honor from what you have, from your wealth, from your property. But when it comes to your parents, it's just stam. Could you bring out a halachic difference from that? Can you guess what the Yerushalmi says? The opposite, meaning exactly. What happens if you don't have money? If you don't have money, then mitzvot which cost money, you're not obligated to impoverish yourself and go around what's called lachzor lapatachim, knocking on the doors to earn money. But if your parents, if you haven't got the money to give your parents what they need, then you've got to go around asking for it. Right? We don't actually, important that that's not actually how the halacha is decided, but that is the Yerushalmi's distinction. Ne'emar, it's also said, ki ish aviv, ish imo v'aviv tira'u, a man, this verse which we've already interrogated, should fear his mother and father, right? People are noticing from the verses there is both yira and kavod, right? Two different sides of this. We always speak about kibud av ve'em, but there is also yirat av ve'em. Man should fear his parents. V'ne'emar, it's obviously also said, et Hashem elokecha tira. You should fear the Lord your God, v'oto ta'avod, and it is him you shall serve. Once again, hishva hakatuv morat ta'av, Ve'em lo morat tamakom. The Torah parallels, makes similar the reverence which one gives to one's parents to the reverence once one gives to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ne'emar, it's also said, k'makalel aviv v'imo mot yumat. A person who curses their parents should surely die. The Ne'emar, and it said, Ish ish ki yikalel Elohav v'nisa chato'o, a person who curses God and carries his sin. Once again, this is now a third mitzvah of the whole world of Av Ve'em, that cursing one's parents is akin to cursing God. Hishva hakatuv birkata Av Ve'em lebirkat hamakom. That doesn't mean bracha, blessing, that means cursing. And then it says, Aval b'haka v'adai yefshar. Right, haka, one is obviously not allowed to strike one's parents, which is also another prohibition. There are four mitzvot of parents, right? Kibud horim, yirat horim, honoring parents, fearing parents. Those are the two positives, and the two negatives are not cursing one's parents, klala, which we've just done, and haka, and striking. That vaday efshar, right? That is not obviously that's not a parallel. You can't strike us. The parallel runs until it doesn't. Until it doesn't quite run. What does all of this teach you? Sheshloshtan shutfin bo. That the three of them, the father, the mother, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each one of them are partners in a person's existence, in a child. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught. Shlosha shutfinhen ba'adam. There are three partners in a person. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Va'aviv, Ve'imo. Bazman sha'adam mechabed et aviv ve'imo. At a time when a person honors their parents. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ma'ale ani alehem. I consider you. Ke'ilu darti b'nehem v'chivduni. As if I dwelt amongst you and you honor me. God is a partner. The Gemara later on then goes to, says the opposite as well. A person who does not give the respect or honor due to their parents, God feels himself to be rejected. Okay? This Agadata, until now, very artfully introduces to us the various different mitzvot of Kibud Av V'Em and draws them into play with the way in which we relate to God. There is Kavod of parents, there is Yirah of parents, there is Kavod of Hashem, there is Yirah of Hashem. And even though, as we briefly alluded to, sometimes these conflict with each other, primarily the Gemara wants to say, consider them as overlapping with each other, that honouring one's parents is akin to honouring God. I want to take this now a step further. Until now, I think this is nice and this is beautiful. I'll take this now to a step further for it to be like, whoa, okay? As one of my hip-hop albums had a song on it, Black Rob, circa 1996, like, whoa. But anyway, that's a random side point. Here's a midrash, source number 10. Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachman patach. Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachman read. Brandon, don't leave for this bit. This is the most hardcore bit. Shir l'malot. A song to the ascents. Is lost. Sa enai el heharim. I cast my eyes to the mountains. Harim, you know the verse. Me'ayin yavoi esri, from where will my help come? Al tikra harim. Don't read mountains. Rather, el hahorim. I cast my eyes el hahorim to my parents. Machloket between myself and Corinne about what this midrash means. I think I'm definitely correct, but I like her reading of it. Anyone who wants to guess what the two possible readings of it are? I think it's pretty obvious.
Look up to your parents.
Right, so I cast my eyes to the heavens. I don't look at God. I look at my parents and your parents. That is my reading. Corinne's understanding was that I'm suffering so much from my parents. Me'ayin yavoi esri. Where is my help going to come from? The parents are the cause of the my parents are the cause of the difficulties. I think the correct reading is Esayin el haharim el haharim. I look to not just God. I look to my parents. Now this is a beautiful midrash, but it wasn't until I read Rav Brandis's reading of the midrash which just like blew me away. The way in which a person has their relationship with their parents, or maybe let's reverse it, the way in which the parents relate to their child will likely massively impact the way their child understands God. Just internalize that for a minute. Right? We speak so frequently of God in parental terms, right? Avinu, not just in paternal, fatherly terms, right? You know, Elohim is masculine, Shechina is feminine. There's a lot of Kabbalistic writing about that. And that's a very deeply felt thing, right? A person whose father, for argument's sake and for the stereotype, is a really demanding father and a really difficult father and always pushing them and focusing much more on din than on rahamim, will likely produce a person whose conception of God is really quite similar to that. A person who, let's play the gender stereotype again, has a mother who is lovely, caring, always accepting when the child fails, picking them up and saying, never mind. And I understand being broad brushstroke and somewhat stereotype, but you get the idea. Well, likely, that child will likely have a conception of God which also mirrors that. So without going into any details whatsoever, but I can certainly tell you from a pastoral perspective and working with sometimes difficult cases, sometimes you see heartbreaking cases, the way in which the parents have treated their children so badly, so completely affecting the way in which that child then relates to God. To give a very extreme example, anyone heard of Shalom Auslander? Shalom Aleichem was very big in New York about 10 years ago. Brooklyn, ex-Hasidic, came from a very abusive home. Very, quote-unquote, orthodox father. Obviously, not really. But very abusive father. Listen to how screwed up Shalom Auslander was, the story that he tells. He says that as a child, age 10, he would purposefully be Mechalel Shabbat. Why? Better than that. Because he knew the halacha that a child under bar mitzvah, the parent is responsible for his sins. And he hated his father so much that he was being Mechalel Shabbat in order that all of the punishments of Chilul Shabbat should devolve upon his father. That's an extreme and terrible example. I would invite and encourage you to think of much more positive examples of it. But just to go home with the idea of the potential for that, that done badly, parent-child relations will produce frequently bad child-God, person-God relations. Done well, and it can be the most beautiful and powerful thing. Shakar, everybody. I hope you enjoyed part one. Onwards into the meat of Kibbud Av Ve'Em next time.